If you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
We're happy to have Cal Wilson back on the show with us today. Cal wrote the book Dirt Cheap, Valuable Prepping, and he's also an attorney, so he's got some valuable information for us from that side as well. Cal, welcome back.
Hey, Mark. Great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Now, last time you were on, you gave us some great tips for prepping on a budget. Looks like your book's doing really well, huh?
That's right. It's in the various top lists for its category, and the sales are looking pretty good. I'm pretty happy with this book, Dirt Cheap, Valuable Prepping.
And everybody can stop by Amazon. We'll probably have a link to it on today's show notes, so you can click through and check that if you want. Otherwise, just head on over to Amazon, and it's there in the various formats. Now, I'd like to pick your brain about some legal stuff today. Okay. We'll start with that body armor ban. Is that bill dead?
It was proposed by Congressman Honda last summer, summer of 2014. As I understand, there were no hearings or anything. Yeah, there was some fanfare, but it was not passed. And he has reintroduced similar legislation in the new Congress, along with a couple of other proposals, but they have not been enacted on yet. It's called the Responsible Body Armor Possession Act, and it has not been passed. And it would probably be a good idea of your listeners to call their congressmen, senators, and voice their opposition to it, even though the chances of it passing are not that great. But you never know. You don't want to take that for granted.
And whether they're false flag attacks or whether it's just accidents or whatever it happens to be, we always see any type of a crisis used as trying to gain the political will to pass that type of legislation. So they're sort of like sharks just sort of circling in the water and just waiting for you to wear out, aren't they?
That's right. There were a couple of the supporters of this bill referred to the Newtown shooting and also the Colorado shooting, and referred to things that some apparel that the shooters wore, and the implication being that, hey, they had body armor, but that's just not true. One was wearing a fishing vest, the other was wearing something that would help him carry stuff, but it was not body armor that these guys wore. But yet, you know, that would be something that they would talk about and promote and say, you know, the implication being is pass this law and stuff like this won't happen. But like you said, that would be kind of a false flag there. So there's no need for this legislation.
And it's really a defensive tool. It's not really something that has any offensive capability. So it seems like the responsible body armor law would be to tell everybody they should buy it.
I totally agree. In my book, I've got a whole chapter about non-gun weaponry, and by and large, I tried to write the book kind of upbeat and throw in jokes here and there. It keeps people reading, but I kind of got a little on a rant there in that chapter referring to what happened in Katrina. You know, after the hurricane in Katrina, the National Guard and the police went door to door grabbing guns, and with the idea that this would stop looting. But the reality is, it was just people at home minding their own business, trying to protect themselves, and the police and the National Guard just wanted to get their guns. So, yeah, this is kind of a weird, weird argument we're constantly getting promoted, that we have to trust the police only to have guns and body armor, and the reality is, it's just another way to control us. You know, it's pretty sad.
And body armor carries about the same function as, let's say, like a lock. It's sort of a safety mechanism. So I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see a day when the liberals will seek to ban locks as well. So I don't
that
know.
That would make things easier for the police.
It would. Yeah, yeah. They wouldn't have to kick in the door so hard.
Yeah.
You just walk right on in.
Yep.
Now, what about the steel core ammo ban? Do you think that's dead, or do you think that's going to come back around?
I think that's dead for now, but my feeling is that it's just, like you said, it's another disaster away from being proposed, and just any excuse will do. You know, the last ATF director has resigned, and there's a new one, the acting one, and he's a little bit more of a party player, reportedly. So, yeah, I think I would not be surprised to see that ban reintroduced and tried to get through for another, after another incident.
And Obama did successfully ban Russian AKs by banning them from being able to be imported into the country. It was part of his sanctions against Russia. But I noticed he didn't ban Russian vodka. Don't you think that would have hit them harder economically?
Yep, if that it was really what was going on, that he's trying to sanction Russia, you know, after invading Ukraine like that, then you would think that he would include sanctions that would really hurt Russia. But, of course, we can all still buy our our Russian vodka, no problem. But the AK-47s, those made in Russia, that's banned as of now. So I think that's a theme that we're seeing with the gun and ammo bans, is that pretty much any excuse can be used to further the left's agenda at banning guns and ammo. You know, like with Russia invading Ukraine, the plan that they did does not exactly enact what they were talking about. So, yeah.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today.
Are you prepared to defend yourself and your loved ones in extraordinary circumstances? Do you know the one piece of gear Special Operations soldiers rely on to gain an unfair advantage in the field? Are you interested in honing your firearm skills based on lessons learned in actual gunfights? In desperate times, ready men rise to the occasion and come out on top in difficult scenarios. With 73 years of Special Forces experience, the Ready Man Cadre blends cutting-edge tactics with the most current prepper skills into each online episode and live training event. Go to readyman.com to learn more and sign up for a free Special Forces-designed hostage escape card that you can easily carry and defeat locks, cut through ropes, and pick your way out of handcuffs. Again, that's readyman.com to sign up for your free Special Forces-designed hostage escape card.
When the government can't get the political will to have to get absolute legislation on issues, they're sort of doing this these underhanded types of policies, like we've seen with Operation Choke Point, where they'll just place pressure on banks and processing centers, credit card processing places, to not do business with people that sell guns or ammo or anything that the state has deemed to be.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the my beef there is, you know, we can debate various proposals, and you know, you and I, it sounds like we're on the same page. But once a proposal is enacted into law, that's the law that we're supposed to follow and be aware of. And with the $5,000 business with banks, the law is that there's a report made and a file made somewhere for $10,000, not $5,000. And the $5,000 threshold is just kind of informally proposed, you know, suggested by the regulators to the banks. And of course, banks want to follow what regulators tell them to do. But this is not a formal law or regulation. It's something suggested by the regulators. So, you know, when we get into that area of what happens with banking, that's just kind of, we don't know what to expect. We don't know what laws, we don't know what the laws are and what kind of rules we're supposed to follow. So, yeah, I really don't like that, the $5,000 business that they get reported for cash dealings of $5,000. That's not right.
Yeah, and for the folks that may not be familiar with that, what we're talking about is the DOJ that just basically gave a briefing to banks this about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that they should tell their tellers. They've always had this thing where if and I don't even really know what the amount is for the suspicious activity reports, but anything that they would feel was suspicious activity, which is large cash withdrawals or large cash deposits, they have to fill out these suspicious activity reports and file them to Homeland Security or DOJ or somebody. And so they're getting thousands and thousands of these things. And now what they're telling them is not only should be, filing a suspicious activities report, but that if somebody takes out more than $5,000, they need to go ahead and call the police. And like you just said, you know, and it was just a form if somebody wanted to take out $10,000. That's not really a law. That was just, you know, that was really just sort of an early form of capital controls. And now it's sort of, there's no law, and I think there's no official policy. But now that number's been scooted down to 5,000. And of course, the same that they've done with the 10,000. If you do 2,500 twice in 1 week, then they'll count that as 5,000 because then, and they'll look at it even more oppressively because they'll say that you were trying to avoid, doing the $5,000 withdrawal. So it's That's just right. getting worse and worse. And they're pushing us towards this cashless society. And it's absolute, this is capital controls is what this is for sure.
Well, and it's, it kind of stops the workability of it. I mean, if you do agree with the premise that higher cash transactions are made in order to, conduct some kind of illegal activity, if you do agree with that, then imagine the flood of all these reports of $5,000 transactions that, you know, people are buying a used car for $5,000. And, with this flood of new notices that come, it pretty much swallows up the 10,000 on up, scrutiny. So the original purpose of this is kind of thwarted by the new approach of only, of giving reports for $5,000. So, it's great. It's hampering the law enforcement that comes from the higher amounts, you know?
And you mentioned, you know, purchasing a car for $5,000. You don't even get much of a car for $5,000. I mean, it's probably going to be have close to 100,000 miles on it in 10 years. And, there's probably some things not working on that That's automobile, right. To get a decent used car, you got to get pretty close to $10,000.
Yeah.
So we've just pretty much been, criminalized to the point that, we really are not able to live our lives freely anymore. Would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what it feels like. You know, I this is one of those cases where I keep thinking the founding fathers, if they were around and were aware of what was going on now, they would just shake their heads. I mean, the revolution was not fought so that we could feel insecure in our just everyday dealings regarding the government. It's pretty sad.
And there's countless stories of people that had cash and even stories of people that had like the Craigslist ad printed out in the car, you know, for the address, and somebody waiting for them to go purchase a car, and they get pulled over and they'll just have their assets seized. They're not even arrested. They're just told, you know, well, we're going to test this money for drugs, which, you know, most cash has mm-hmm. been in the hands of a drug dealer at some point. So it's probably going to have some, drug residue on it.
Right.
And so when they test it's usually going to come back positive. But I mean, there's absolutely no proof that these people were doing anything wrong. And there's so much evidence of people having their assets seized without being charged for a crime. How do we fight back legally against something like that?
Yeah. You know, your, listeners might be in, probably all over the U.S. So I hard for me to say there's, one particular approach, but I can say this, that when something is seized by the government, you do have a right to insist upon at least getting a receipt, so that when they drive off with your gun or whatever it is, that you at least have a receipt in hand saying, okay, they acknowledge that they got it. Now, in some jurisdictions, as I understand it, that receipt also informs you of certain rights that you have with regard to getting that stuff back. And a lot of these, as I understand it, they're kind of complicated notifications. But if you consult an attorney on how do I get this stuff back, that's probably the best way to do it. And what I would recommend is every county has a bar association, which is a group of lawyers, and most of them offer a lawyer referral service where you can get a free half an hour, for example, interview. And what you need to do is just talk to an attorney for free for half an hour at least. And of course, it's going to be sometimes it's going to be a sales job, but at least be aware of your rights regarding what was seized from you. And also, keep in mind that there are deadlines that are usually in place to give the advantage to the government. So in some cases, it might be a 3-day deadline, you know, to file some notice of appeal or whatever, or 30 days. But make sure that you consult an attorney and know your rights regarding getting that stuff back, and also educate yourself on the deadlines as well. So that's what I would recommend for anybody who has had stuff seized from them.
It's starting to sound more and more like Nazi Germany. You know, you can't do certain things or have certain things unless you're a member of the party.
Yeah. Well, it feels kind of like a banana republic. You know, that if you don't have the right connections, then the law does not apply to you, or it could apply to you depending on who you know and what party you're in. It's like I keep saying that we're still in a republic. We're just of the banana republic variety.
and we've gone from sort of intimidation by the state to now actual crimes being committed against us by the state, in, you know, especially in this the asset seizures, which is, you can't call that anything but theft. Like you said, it's all kind of geared towards the state, and it's hard for us to ever get justice from the courts against such a big and powerful offender, isn't it?
Yep. Seizure laws and evidence collecting is a big way of it's something that's been abused for years in this country. Many years ago, I was involved in cases, litigation that involved search and seizure. You know, search warrants where drugs and money was collected from suspected drug dealers. And I can remember sitting there in the courtroom, As the police officer read off a list of everything that was taken, the police officer would come down to the part of the list where the police officer mentioned X amount of dollars that were confiscated and collected and taken into evidence. And as you look around the courtroom, you could see every defendant at that point quickly turn to his or her attorney saying, and I know what it was saying, was, where's the rest of the money? You know, that's it happens a lot in all over the United States, where mostly money, but sometimes guns, sometimes drugs even, are confiscated, collected as evidence, and never wind up in the evidence locker.
Cal, it'd be a crime to get you on the program and not have you give us at least one good prepping tip for saving money, since you've sort of literally wrote the book on prepping on a budget. So give us a good tip and then tell us one more time where we can find the book.
Thanks. Last time I was on the show, we talked a little bit about other things, but I wanted to mention flashlights and rechargeable batteries and chargers. It's a rookie mistake I've seen new preppers do when they buy these kind of wind-up flashlights, wind-up radios, because what you're doing is generating electricity that is in a battery that's inside that device. And the batteries, no rechargeable batteries are as good as Eneloop is the brand, E-N-E-L-O-O-P. And that would be something good to stock up on. As well as the best chargers, in my opinion, are La Crosse. So you can buy those batteries and buy that charger. And there's a good solar charger out there as well. And it's made by Goal Zero. And flashlights and batteries, it's a good idea to buy those where you can replace AA or AAA batteries. And that's where Eneloop comes in, because those are such excellent batteries. And I've seen the Eneloop batteries on sale recently at Costco on a discount. So that would be something I'd like to recommend to your listeners now, is buy, look for flashlights with very high lumens that also use AA or AAA batteries, and also the radios that are good to have around if the grid goes down or if electricity is off for a while. Make sure that those radios use AA or AAA batteries, and make sure the batteries that you use are Eneloop. La Crosse is spelled like it sounds. It's a great battery charger, and so I would recommend La Crosse battery chargers.
And those are smart chargers?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's so important, because you get really good batteries, really good rechargeable batteries, and if you don't have a smart charger, it's kind of a waste, because you put four batteries in and it'll charge till one of them gets charged, and then it'll just cut off. And
right.
And it's a good thing to have a good smart charger.
La Crosse charges AA and AAA. If any one of them are already charged up, they stop charging that particular battery and keep charging the rest. So yeah, La Crosse is a great brand to recharge batteries.
Cal, thanks so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.